Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. My friends with Students for Sensible Drug Policy kicked off their 420 Week of Unity with a news conference on April 15th entitled, Whom Did the Biden Pardons Help? And Did They Go Far Enough? The next voice you hear will be that of SSDP Executive Director Kat Murty. She introduces the other two speakers, who were themselves recipients of presidential pardons for federal marijuana possession offenses, Regional Normal Organizer Chris Goldstein and SSDP alum Valerie DeRoe Schultz.
Far too many people think that the fight for cannabis justice is done, and all of us here in this room know that it's not. We still have so much to fight for. So many people are still in prison. Over a 250,000 people were arrested in the United States just last year, 92% simply for marijuana possession. And these problems continue. So it's so important that we recenter our message and that we push for the policies now that we really want in the long term. In one of our previous conversations, we talked about some of the legislation that's being considered in Congress right now. And so we know that there's a whole lot of interest that's happening. Both of our guests today are the result of interest that's happening on the White House. But it's really important that we don't allow these to be one-off measures that, you know, that don't actually get us to that future of freedom for free people that we had all hoped for. And so I'm so excited that we get to kick off our 420 week of unity today with both of these folks, both amazing people, friends of mine, hopefully friends of yours. They'll be joining us in Washington, D.C. in a couple of days. Valerie DeRoe Schultz and Chris Goldstein. So let's talk a little bit about what brought us here today and what really started this 420 week of unity. Because on the campaign trail, President Biden said, quote, we should decriminalize marijuana, promising that we should let everyone with a marijuana record out of jail. Their record should be expunged and they'll be completely zeroed out. That's his term, not mine. We're not there yet. What happened? So we're coming to DC to demand that he keeps his promise and that all of our elected representatives in Congress finally end the decade-long war on cannabis. On October 6th of 2022, that's about 2 years ago almost, President Biden, in what was billed at the time as the largest ever act of clemency in a generation, announced a mass pardon for people convicted of federal marijuana possession. Just 14 months later, he again issued a blanket pardon. Unfortunately, not one single person was released from prison as a result of either pardon. So whom did they actually benefit? Well, actually both of our guests here today. Valerie DeRoe Schultz is an alum of Students for Sensible Drug Policy. We actually knew each other as chapter leaders far too long ago. And she's the former leader of SSDP's University of Utah chapter. In 2022, Valerie received a pardon from President Biden for a previous cannabis charge, and she's used that opportunity to advocate for wider retroactive justice for more victims of the war on drugs, as well as the full legalization and decriminalization of marijuana. We also have Chris Goldstein, who is an American radio personality. The first time we talked, I wasn't quite sure why I recognized his voice, and then I realized it's because he did the Normal podcast for so many years, and so I remember listening to it when I first got involved in this movement back in 2007. So he's been around. He's always been a friend of SSDP. He's a Regional Normal organizer and a dedicated marijuana activist, and his smoke down prohibition protests helped lead to the decriminalization of marijuana in Philadelphia. It also put a cannabis charge on his record. So in 2023, Chris received a pardon from President Biden. And then in 2024, literally just a few weeks ago, he was invited to an exclusive roundtable conversation at the White House where he pushed for cannabis justice. And this is big, y'all. He got Vice President Harris to explicitly state, quote, we need to legalize marijuana. So I'm so happy to have you both here today. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
So I talked about it a little bit, but can you guys tell us a bit about the charges that put you in the situation in the first place?
Chris, would you like to go first?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Thank you. Mine were a simple possession charge. It was a half a gram of marijuana that got me dragged into federal court. Like you said, we were protesting. This was way back in 2014, and we were protesting federal marijuana prohibition out in front of Independence Hall in Philadelphia. They've got a monument to the First Amendment right there on the corner of Fifth and Market Street. And they've got a little area outside that they call a free speech demonstration area. So we figured we'd demonstrate a little free speech by lighting some joints at 420. And it was such a nice spot, we decided to come back every single month at 420 to light some more joints. And things went really well. On April 20th, 2013, about 1,000 people showed up and lit joints in front of Independence Hall. Nobody was arrested, nobody was cited. But it kind of put us on notice with the authorities because when we came back in May, there was like 50 of us with joints and there were 400 cops there tactically armed, ready to address us. Seriously. I didn't know that the National Park Service had riot gear, but they have riot gear and it's green and they wore it for us with our joints. I'm a Quaker. The most dangerous thing I have is a joint. So, and it's not a dangerous thing, believe me. So we were kind of shocked at how we were treated, but they went even further because the U.S. attorney was there with all those cops. And the U.S. attorney, the federal
You were a
prosecutor,
big threat, Chris.
oh my gosh, yes. If we threatened them with our joints and our lighters, they're very scary. It was funny. It was funny up until we got sentenced, I have to say. So it was 10 years ago. It was March of 2014 that I got sentenced in court. And that was, for me, one of the scariest days of my life. In front of a federal judge who said to me, "Mr. Goldstein, I strongly considered putting you in prison for 30 days for these offenses. But I got a 2 years of supervised federal probation. It turned into 40 supervised drug tests at my house, a $3,000 cash fine, and a permanent federal criminal record for half a gram of cannabis." So I got pardoned this year, and it was a result of the website the Department of Justice created. For people like me, if you do have a simple possession charge, you can put your information in and they send you your pardon in the email. So it is a very modern thing. It was a very good experience to get the pardon. But that's how I got arrested.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for sharing your story with us, Val. Would you mind?
Not at all. I didn't get arrested, but I got caught smoking weed in a forest. I was hiking Mount Olympus in Utah and just really having a Zen moment when the police showed up with the wrong energy, acting like they were doing some kind of favor, and gave me, they searched my whole car, they found the pipe, so I got possession and paraphernalia. Also, I had a little more than half a gram. I do feel really bad for you, Chris, for just getting busted with such a small amount, but no more than an eighth. And they acted like they were on the Lord's errand that they were so offended that I would even be smoking weed. I got a $1,000 fine, 6 months of drug court, 6 months of drug tests that I had to pay for. I lost my license. I was unable to maintain the productive schedule I had, which involved two jobs, one of which was teaching children. And the biggest feeling I had at the moment was, here you are interrupting my life and productivity and contributions to society because you think that me smoking a plant is wrong. And now I don't teach children anymore. And there's a problem in the workforce finding actual teachers willing to help children. So that was a big moment of awareness in my life that these laws are more harmful than helpful, and that there is such a great need to stand up and still activate exactly what President Biden said to release all the nonviolent drug offenders from prison and help people be contributing citizens of society without any records holding them back.
So let's talk a little bit about that record. You both talked about how about the honestly humiliating and expensive and disruptive results of those charges, right? But what happened long term? How did having that record impact you?
Yeah, you talked about teaching, Val, and I have to say that I was an adjunct instructor too. And in the academic professions, whether you're teaching little kids or college students, having that record is something that's it's going to create a stigma right away in the profession. They don't get to see that it's a half a gram on your record. It just sort of pings as a federal drug record. And at that moment, that's where the pardon can really help. You know, having a printed out presidential pardon with your name on it is the answer to that record, even though it still exists. But the reality is for parents, for anybody working in the academic professions, this is something that's going to come up regularly, and it can prevent anybody from working in these spaces. But that's where it's the most common too. And it is really something that is, it comes up more often than you'd think in the modern world.
Yes, I agree. It weighed really heavy on me for a decade, wondering if that was always lingering in the background. Every time I applied for a job and they ask, have you ever been convicted of a crime? I'm thinking, how much do they know? Will this automatically show up? Can I lie about this? And it's just a total mind warp on having righteous desires to work, to pay taxes, to contribute to society, and knowing that this little thing is lingering in the background the whole time.
And yeah, it does create like a stigma too, where the when you apply, I mean, where it comes up isn't just in academia. It's with housing. It's as a parent coaching a softball team or even just taking a kid on a trip. So this is everywhere where you get a background check on your criminal background anymore. So having it, and I think that there's more understanding, like at the state level, it kind of shows up as marijuana, but the federal records, it just says federal drug record. People are like, oh, federal drug record, huh? So how many thousand pounds of cocaine were you shipping in from Bolivia? That's immediately kind of where it goes. So if you get a chance to explain it, you're lucky, but often you don't even have a conversation about it. Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, this is like, you mentioned some of those when you get a background check, but I mean, we live in the modern world with the internet. People could just, you know, for fun or to just see what learn stuff about your neighbors or anything like that. People are going to search this stuff up and it's on the public record. So this is almost like the first thing that people get to know about you after your name. And without even the context, the detail, the story around it.
I actually spoke to the White House after these blanket pardons were issued. My sister looked up my record for fun and it was still on it.
Yeah. So that's actually, it doesn't get rid of, your record is still there. You can just get the letter. But let's talk about that. How did y'all feel when you first heard about these pardons? Was there a moment of relief? Did you even hear about it? How did you hear about it? What was your thought?
My friend Weldon Angelos had told me he'd been working with the White House. They were issuing these pardons and that he knew about my situation and said, you qualify for this. And I was like, oh, really? He's like, yes, I need your information, blah, blah. At the time, I was doing a million other things and it wasn't even a priority because by then in the last decade, I completely switched my lifestyle. Righteous were the desires to teach, but because of having something like this on my record, I chose a completely different profession. I went all in on the arts. My husband and I now live in Los Angeles. We work in Hollywood. And these people aren't really caring if you have a little bit of marijuana on your record. So we've been able to be prosperous in other ways. But here's the government shooting itself in the foot because teachers are desperately needed. And I'm not going to be one anymore because I don't want to play these little games. So when Weldon helps me do that, it turns out, this is totally crazy, but I felt that I had this on my record for 10 years and that pardon would actually help. It turns out that the drug court that I did 10 years ago somehow, some way qualified me for something I'm not even clear on and that I don't actually qualify to get a printout pardon like Chris does.
You just heard Students for Sensible Drug Policy alum Valerie DeRoe Schultz. She was preceded by normal activist Chris Goldstein and SSDP Executive Director Kat Murty. They were taking part in an April 15th news conference entitled Whom Did the Biden Pardons Help? And Did They Go Far Enough? Which kicked off SSDP's 420 Week of Unity. We'll be back with more in a moment. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Welcome back. I'm going to stay with the question, whom did the Biden pardons help, and did they go far enough? The panel at that news conference took some questions, so let's hear some of that. Next voice you hear will be that of SSDP Executive Director Kat Murty.
I see another question here from Doug McVeigh, which is very cool, by the way. I have your books. Doug asks, events like the 4th of July smoke-in have, in a sense, been mass acts of mass civil disobedience, with attendees smoking publicly and daring police to make arrests. In today's climate, are events like this still meaningful, and should they continue? So that's a great question. I will say, and I want to hear from both Val and Chris on this, I will say that we didn't do exactly that, but right after the October 6, 2022 pardon, SSDP put together a protest at the White House about 2 weeks later. So this was a real organizing, getting students from around the country to the White House in a couple of weeks. But to remind folks that this wasn't actually fulfilling the campaign promise that President Biden made, that in fact, marijuana was still illegal and not a single person was let out of prison. What we did was we played his campaign speech on loop in front of the White House. We did a big thing. We did a lot of stuff, and we weren't sure. We did legal training for everybody who was going to participate, making sure that they knew, like, hey, here's how the court system works. It's really complicated when it comes especially to the White House and to DC, who's in jurisdiction where, where you would go, what kinds of charges, and we were worried about it. And there were cops there, but they all overwhelmingly kept telling us, we really, really don't want to arrest you because this is going to look bad. We did, one of our board members was eventually arrested, and but this was hours later. And so that's at least our experience. They know that the at least when it comes to the White House, when it comes to Washington, D.C., it's not good for them politically to be seen arresting people on this issue.
I think that's I agree. I doubt that they're going to be motivated to arrest people for simply smoking marijuana anymore. However, I've asked reporters, I was arrested in a national park. I've asked every reporter who's covered my pardon to call the National Park Service and ask what they're doing and get them on record somehow and talk about what they're doing about marijuana arrests. They will not go on record about it so far. So the real world is, I doubt that they're going to, I mean, I plan to go to the vigil on later this week. I plan to smoke a joint in front of the White House. Before I went into the White House, I smoked a joint. I smoked a joint in front of the Department of Justice before I went into the Department of Justice. So I don't feel like too risky about that. I do carry my pardon around with me in my briefcase. So, you know, maybe that helps a little bit, or maybe I should put it onto a t-shirt. I'm not sure. But back to Doug's original point, do you think that these events are still worthwhile? Yeah, I do. I mean, again, we still have arrests happening in Pennsylvania. And quite frankly, even in legalized states, there's a stigma against cannabis consumers. I live here in New Jersey. We have a clothing optional beach here. We have many beaches where you can walk your dog. There is no beach in New Jersey where you're allowed to smoke cannabis, technically. So I think that there's a lot of ways we need to go for consumer rights and to break the stigma. And I think for all the beer gardens I see in the world, I think that smoking marijuana in public is certainly something that is a valid protest, unfortunately.
So let me also, I feel like I sounded a little bit overly optimistic on this, because it's true that they don't want to arrest people who are protesting, who, you know, who look like us, who we're all, none of us are teenagers. We're not like, we all have media training, we're savvy, we know how to carry ourselves in a certain way. There are cameras on our protests. These are very different situations. Arrests are still happening. This is a huge issue. It's not done by any means. I mean, I already talked about the at least a quarter million Americans who were arrested last year. But it happens even in places here like Washington, D.C., after we passed I-71, which is our mostly legal cannabis legislation, right? It allows you to possess, gift, grow, or consume cannabis, but only on private property and if you're over the age of 21. So we actually saw arrest rates go up in D.C. after the passing of I-71. And it wasn't for people like me. It was for mostly young people, for teenagers, and for people who lived in public housing. And so, I mean, and these are people, it's a lot harder to advocate. And it's a big issue. And it's really why we need to be really mindful about how we're passing these policies, how we're thinking about who gets impacted. You mentioned the crack cocaine sentencing disparities, right? You know, and that was a big deal. It used to be the case. It used to be a big issue in the drug policy world that cocaine, powder cocaine, was sentenced at 100th of the length of sentence as crack cocaine, even though they are literally the same drug, right? They're just slightly different formats of ingesting the same drug, but they have a different demographic attached with them, right? And so we were able to bring that down to an 18-to-1 sentencing disparity. And this was a compromise that was made as we were trying to push this through. And the idea was, okay, well, so many people care about this. Fine, we'll bring it down to 18-to-1 and then it'll disappear. Well, it's been a while since we brought it down to 18-to-1 and it's no longer an issue because everyone was like, well, you already solved that. And people are still getting sentenced at 18 times the length of sentence if they have crack cocaine versus if they have powder cocaine. And so I do think that this is something that we need to be concerned about. Arrests are still happening. Arrests are still happening miles from the White House, near the White House, et cetera. It's just not as much people like me and Val and Chris. It's poor, mostly Black teenagers.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're okay. If this happened in Utah, there would be a lot of arrests. I think you have to be careful. Like Kat said, public housing is also something that could be jeopardized. But like Doug said and brought up, there's nothing more beautiful. There's no more beautiful protest than the act of civil disobedience. And while I'm not necessarily organizing people to smoke a joint to prove a point, if Chris smokes a joint in Washington, I'll smoke a joint in Washington.
It's all about the unity, y'all.
It is. You know, and it's funny. I've smoked some of my best joints in front of the White House, thinking back on it. You know, and there have been times where the police have been tough. But there have been other times where I've just smoked a joint in Lafayette Park and enjoyed the afternoon and nobody's messed with me at all. It's kind of funny. But also, too, to your point about who gets arrested and how, in New Jersey, when we passed legalization, we made sure to pass a decriminalization law that was in concurrence that applied to all ages so that police can't even approach anybody under 18 for the smell of marijuana in New Jersey. In Philadelphia in 2014, when we wrote the decrim ordinance in that city, it applies to all ages so that the $25 non-criminal ticket is given to juveniles as well as to adults. So to your point, that is something that we have learned a lesson on. And that is a hard lesson we learned in early adoptive states like Colorado and Washington, D.C., where police enforcement was redirected right at kids and right at teenagers. It was not cool. And we learned to make sure to cut that off right before any of it started in New Jersey and other and Philadelphia and places. But that's something I talk with legislators about all the time. When we talk about decriminalizing cannabis, whether it's at the municipal level or the national level, this is something that has to apply to all ages, very simply. There shouldn't be a 21 or 18, it's an all ages, it should be an all ages policy.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's a difference between arrest rates have gone up in states that only legalize adult use, but not in states that decriminalize cannabis use. But I also want to talk that cannabis marijuana thing, because I had an interesting conversation with you about New Jersey. And I know this is the case in, I know we're talking about federal law when it comes to this week, but we're bringing these fights back to our states, right? And so this is a larger issue. I think this is really interesting. Can you explain to me how cannabis and marijuana are maybe treated a little differently under the law, even though they're literally the two words for the exact same thing?
Right. So everybody is going to have to take a leap into quantum cannabis with me today, because in New Jersey, we did something really weird. We left marijuana with the M in Schedule One of our state CSA, but we created new legal definitions for medical and adult use cannabis that we sell outside of that. And what we do now is that everything that is unregulated is used as marijuana enforcement. So that's why they left it there. And then everything that is regulated is called cannabis. So again, here you have a plant that is in a quantum state where it exists simultaneously in different galaxies of the law. But that really doesn't work. So when we talk about descheduling, I hope that folks realize some states have descheduled cannabis. I want to be clear. Virginia descheduled cannabis. That was an important recent one. But most states haven't. So when we're talking about the descheduling conversation, it's something that you can have at the federal and state level. And even if you've legalized marijuana in your state, it's a conversation that still needs to happen.
And it's also important when people ask, why are we asking for descheduling, specifically cannabis at the federal level? Some of those state legislators are really pushing back over this idea of descheduling at their level, because they're saying, well, but it's under the Federal Controlled Substances Act. And so we have to follow that. And so if we deschedule marijuana, which is the word used in the Controlled Substances Act, that removes that argument for them. And then it makes it easier for us to stop having this sort of weird, like, Twilight Zone distinction between legal cannabis and illegal marijuana.
Well, and also too, there's some sunset clauses too. In the state CSAs, there are sunset clauses built in so that if the federal law changes, the state law is supposed to be automatically addressed. However, that doesn't happen vice versa. So again, the descheduling conversation, removing marijuana completely from the Controlled Substances Act of regulations, and removing the word marijuana from those CSAs at the state level, that's a conversation that everybody can continue to have at the federal and the state level.
That was Normal activist Chris Goldstein. In that segment, you also heard Students for Sensible Drug Policy alum Valerie DeRoe-Schultz and SSDP Executive Director Kat Murty. They were speaking at a news conference April 15th entitled, Whom Did the Biden Pardons Help? And Did They Go Far Enough? Which kicked off SSDP's 420 Week of Unity. You can find out more about Students for Sensible Drug Policy at their website, ssdp.org. That's ssdp.org. And for now, that's it. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Many thanks to everyone out there fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. And you make it all possible. Free Culture Radio is a volunteer production for Community Radio, syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's Audio Port Service. Please, support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Links are at the website kboo.fm/freeculture. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!